The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
The Nonprofit Voice is a premier radio program featuring nonprofits on Long Island every Saturday morning. For the past 6 years, we have learned about, been inspired by, and celebrated hundreds of nonprofits in our community. The Nonprofit Voice is produced by Marketing Works, the only full-service marketing and public relations firm that works almost exclusively with nonprofit agencies. We pride ourselves on our reputation in creating strategic marketing and public relations campaigns, successful virtual, hybrid, and live events, as well as powerful social media and digital campaigns. As the leaders in nonprofit marketing, no other agency understands the industry as we do, and we are committed to the success of each and every one of our clients. Marketing Works hopes you enjoy this week's featured nonprofit. And our featured nonprofit today is the Family Service League. Welcome and good morning to you, Karen, and you too, Jonathan.
Thank you so much.
I think you were one of our first guests 6 years ago, Karen. I know you've been on with me. You had to be. You're one of the biggest agencies on Long Island. And, you know, we've had almost everyone on. So tell me about Family Service League.
We started in 1926.
1926. Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're going on our 96th year.
Uh-oh. And waiting for 100.
Yeah, right. Started with a group of volunteers in the Huntington community who felt that there were issues that needed to be addressed, similar to what we deal with today, poverty, unemployment, food insecurity, mental health issues. So that's how we started, by a group of volunteers, and at a later point, the agency became incorporated in 1930 and hired the first director, and then moved on from there. Throughout all the decades, Ron, we've been developing programs to meet the needs of Long Island.
Well, you have, since you've been there, really expanded Family Service League. Am I right?
It's a group effort. I always say we're a team. So it's me with my wonderful executive team management. We certainly have grown. I mean, when I came to Family Service League in 1993, I've been in different positions before I became the CEO, but we were about a $12 million organization. And today, through a lot of growth, we're about a $58 million organization. So, you know, again, through a group effort of a lot of talented people, we work together and have developed the programs and grown to where we are today.
How many locations do you have?
20.
20 locations. That's amazing. And how many people do you serve?
We serve about 50,000 a year.
I mean, that's what blew me apart. 50,000 mm-hmm. people you serve.
Yeah.
Not all in the same location, right?
No. You know, we do a little work in Nassau County. Most of our work is here in Suffolk County. And throughout our various locations throughout the county, you know, people are served, individuals and families.
Jonathan, tell me about you. Jonathan Checo is the Chief Development Officer.
How are you, Ron? Good morning. I have a long relationship with Family Service League, even before I started here in this role, in that I used to have a relationship with their clients and a camp that I used to run for another organization. So I was always aware of Family Service League in the background, and I started my career about 20 years ago. But I would say that, you know, throughout, you know, what I was doing in nonprofit on Long Island, whenever you heard the name FSL or Family Service League, you always knew that you were talking about a premier nonprofit agency. They set the tone. They're the leaders. They're the innovators. And their staff has always had the reputation, our staff now, has always had the reputation of being really top-notch in this industry.
So if you think of Karen, when people think of Family Service League, you know, in the name, it's family service. We take care of the families, the children's. And what do you want people to think of first?
That we're here for everybody, Ron. That, you know, problems exist for everybody. And every community, there are concerns or issues. I like to say we're the safety net for Long Island, Ron, that whatever problem someone is facing, whatever point in your life, Family Services is there to help. And we really have so many varied services that in all likelihood we'll be able to help. And that's what we do. You know, we don't turn people away. If there's an issue, I'm sure we can help it. And if unlikely, if there's some area that we don't happen to do, we're certainly going to help that person get connected to another resource. But what I'd like them to know is that we are here in the community and are here to help. And again, no matter what problem you have, however large or small it might be, you can call us and let us know if we have a program or if we, you know, a service to be able to help you.
Well, I love the team approach. I love the way you said it's not me, it's everyone else. But you know what? You have to have a good leader to take that team to the next step. So I'll take that away from you saying it. But yeah. I know what the atmosphere is out in Long Island. And as far as nonprofit agencies, you're tops.
Thank you, Ron.
And that's what I always hear. And you know I feel that way about you. But you're really going through a lot, as every other agency has been going through, with how you handle the COVID situation.
We have. And like I said, like everyone else, and it's a challenge. And certainly when we started back in 2020 and it began, that certainly, gave us tremendous challenge. But we were able to pivot pretty quickly, Ron, with a lot of telehealth. And the clients welcomed it. I have to tell you that. I mean, they felt safer by doing it with sessions remotely. Our staff were grateful that we, obviously took their health needs into consideration, as we always do. So we're able to pivot pretty quickly. But, I have to tell you, it's probably even more of a challenge now that, as we all know, so many more people, even those who are fully vaccinated, boosted, there are a lot of breakthrough cases with Omicron right now. And that certainly hits our workforce. A lot of people are out. And if they're not the person who's, positive with COVID, it could be a family member. And then they need to stay around. It could be a child. So they were obviously going to stay home as a parent with their child. So it's really has a domino effect here. And as a result, we've really have moved back to a hybrid model of care where many of our services, are delivered remotely, but staff have a combination of working in the office some days and remotely the other, except for our 24/7 programs that don't have that ability because of the nature of the program. But, the bottom line is, though, we did it, and we knew that was the other piece. Lessons learned from how we started in 2020, we were able to, again, pivot and know what we needed to do to help continue to meet the needs of our clients who depend on us.
I think the best thing that we've gotten out of this are two new words, pivot and virtual.
That's true.
You've used it a lot. I use it a lot. Everybody uses it a lot. It's funny how they come right into your manner of speaking and your speeches there. But how many people work for you?
Right now, it's about 650.
How many people do you need?
Well, we put it this way. We have well over 100 positions that are open right now.
Isn't that something? Every agency has that now.
Yep, every agency. And it's a small pool of people looking for jobs right now, incredibly. But yeah, we have a lot of positions open. So we could use another 100 employees. And please, anyone listening, look on our website at fsl-li.org and under employment opportunities. We're a wonderful organization to work for.
So what happens in a situation like that? I mean, where you're down 100 people, does that mean that the people that are working have to do double and triple shifts?
No, not double and triple shifts, but, we do our best to try to continue to serve everybody. There may be a little bit of a wait at times with some programs, but, I don't want to overburden this existing staff. So, the staff, as they come back, from quarantine. And there are some staff who, if they've been contracted COVID, but they really have a very mild case, feel comfortable to continue working remotely to see their clients, by telehealth. So it really varies. If they can do remote work, great. But if they're ill and they need to be out ill, that's the safest thing. They just stay and not worry about work. We manage to get along, and where needed, other staff can pitch in where appropriate. So we manage it. But no, I can't double up someone's caseload too much. We're going to burn staff out. But everyone pitches in to do what we need to do to make sure people get their needs met.
So you're doing children's mental health, right?
We do mental health for everybody. Yeah.
For everybody. You know, I have a bunch of agencies that have children's mental health, and that has become a big issue. Mental health is a big issue. There's no doubt about that. And it seems like the agencies that serve the mental health community are having to take on a lot more people than they had originally before this happened. But how are your social workers doing with them?
It's tough. Mental health issues for children, for adolescents, and we do see that it is tough, but we're fortunate that we have a cadre of staff or clinicians who work well with children. We get a lot of referrals from school districts. And even in our crisis stabilization center, where schools refer for evaluations for mental health status or substance abuse issues, we've certainly seen an uptick in that since COVID from adolescents. But the staff are terrific and very committed to doing what they need to do.
Well, you know, you brought up before about telehealth, and, you know, telehealth is very big now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think it's going to be after this is over? Do you think that some of the people or a good portion of the people are going to stay with telehealth, or is it going to die down and people are going to be seen in person?
You know what? I feel like it's going to be here forever, you know, going forward. Will it recede a little bit? Perhaps. It works, Ron. And there are some people who feel more comfortable. Clients mean to say, you know what, if I can do this from the privacy of my own home, I'd rather do that. Others, you're right, want to come in, and that's great. But I do think this is not going to go away because, when the pandemic really, recedes, I do think this is the way forward, that there will always be telehealth. And I think it provides a great additional tool in our toolbox here.
Do you do telepharmacy as well as telehealth?
We have a pharmacy that, yes, we can do fill the prescriptions that way as well. We have a pharmacy that works with us that's embedded in our clinics in our Bayshore building. So we do that too.
So you have day habs. How are they affected right now? Are they less in capacity?
Yeah, we really don't have day habs. We have one program that's called PROS.
Right.
And so personalized recovery oriented services. And some of them have certainly been impacted and, hesitant to come in. But again, somewhere possible, they come in. They certainly can see the psychiatrist here for medications, that nature. And some of the other work can be done remotely.
So I'm looking at, you cover so many things, Karen. I don't know how you keep abreast of everything. When I look at all the services that you provide, it's amazing. Your addiction services, I think of some of the agencies that, handle the addiction more so when it's tied in with, with the all the things that are happening now, that during this COVID period, it's been very difficult to keep track of everybody. Did you have those problems too with your addiction services of getting the people in to get medicine, or were you never closed, right?
No, we never closed. And so again, if it was provided virtually or in person, because even early on, where more staff certainly were working remotely then, we didn't miss a beat, Ron. We were able to continue to meet our clients remotely. They were able to get, the services they needed. We even did some group work remotely. We didn't encounter that problem of having a hard time keeping track of the clients or meeting, getting them the counseling, getting them the treatment that they needed.
Well, we found some of the other agencies with the social services, social workers calling, that it was hard to get them on the phone. It was hard to keep track of them. Trying to talk to children at that time was difficult, especially if they were in a tough situation in their home. It wasn't easy in that regard.
That, you know, that part wouldn't be. More of our work, though, for outpatient therapy is with certainly adolescents and up. We do see children, but a lot of the children we see are served in different home visiting programs where the staff, even throughout COVID, some of them went, you know, certainly in the early days of COVID, we're starting to be in the springtime, if they could meet with a family outdoors, that's what they did, you know, masked up, social distancing, all of that. But a lot of the children we serve are in a variety of programs where the staff would go into the home. But again, when the real spikes in COVID, no, they didn't do that. If possible, they met outdoors with them. And then when possible, if that couldn't work, they did the telehealth or even telephone. And you're right, if there was a child with a particular issue and they couldn't talk, that could have been difficult. But by and large, I didn't hear that from staff.
Well, that's great. What are some of the challenges you're facing now?
Staffing shortages.
That's number one.
As I said, we have over 100 positions open right now. And I'll let Jonathan talk about the challenges, too, with fundraising. But it's really that and, you know, continue to keep everyone motivated and staff morale up, because it's a challenge, you know, for themselves. It's, you know, even, you know, seeing clients and everything else, just the environment and dealing with COVID, whether it's personal or professional, staff, you know, pretty exhausted by this.
And I just wanted to add, Ron, that, you know, for the last 4 years running, we've been voted a top workplace through a survey, an independent survey company that surveys our full staff.
Best places to work, right?
Best places to work.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And that's on a national level as well as a local regional level. So compared to other nonprofits of our size. So, you know, we may have 100 positions open, but it's a really great place to work. And if anybody out there is listening, just know that.
Well, Jonathan, we're going to be talking to you on the second half of the show about fundraising, about events, and I'm saving you for that part. So the first half, don't get nervous, Karen. I've got it all covered. I've got a plan. How can a donor specify where a donation can go?
It's as easy as what you just said. A donor can specify on a check, on a note, contact us, and say that they, you know, specifically want to, you know, restrict a gift to XYZ program. It's very, very simple, Ron.
Did you have an uptick in donations last year?
Yes, we did.
But not enough to make up for the losses of your events and everything else, right?
No, not quite. And, you know, we ended up doing fine, you know, with the donations and fundraising. We also held events virtually, and, you know, by and large, they did okay. Doesn't substitute for being in person, for sure. But I have to say the community stepped to the plate and really helped us even through our virtual events.
And rather than say that it didn't make up for the losses, how I like to put it is it doesn't fulfill the need. And that's really the point, is that there, you know, you can have all the goals you like, but the need is ever present and growing. And no matter what goals you have, there'll always be a need for more resources to serve people.
You know, I'll tell you something interesting. I do a lot of events for a lot of my clients, and, you know, they get tiring after a while. And before COVID, it was like, oh, another event, basically, that you were thinking about. Now, during COVID, there weren't many events except for golf. Golf was one of the few that you could have that where you could be in person and not and feel safe in some way. As long as the dinner was outside, if there was a dinner, and I saw some of them that canceled the dinner and only played the golf part of it. So a couple of months ago, we started having some events inside. And as scary as they were, people were really excited to be out. It was like, okay, I'm outside of my cat cocoon and I can get out. So there was a different kind of a camaraderie that's been missing for the last couple of years. And I'm hoping this goes away as fast as it did in South Africa, you know, when it came up, and then it is starting to deteriorate a little bit. I don't know if you noticed that.
To recede a little bit. The numbers hopefully are going down, but yeah, we agree. I mean, there's something to be said to absolutely connecting with people, networking.
Oh, yeah.
Meeting with them in person at an event and socializing is definitely missed.
Oh, it definitely was. So, you know, I look forward to going back to that dinner that I had at, what was it, Bourne Mansion that you have?
Yes, we have.
What a wonderful event you put on, Karen.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The Nonprofit Voice is a premier radio program featuring nonprofits on Long Island every Saturday morning. For the past 6 years, we have learned about, been inspired by, and celebrated hundreds of nonprofits in our community. The Nonprofit Voice is produced by Marketing Works, the only full-service marketing and public relations firm that works almost exclusively with nonprofit agencies. We pride ourselves on our reputation in creating strategic marketing and public relations campaigns, successful virtual, hybrid, and live events, as well as powerful social media and digital campaigns. As the leaders in nonprofit marketing, no other agency understands the industry as we do, and we are committed to the success of each and every one of our clients. Marketing Works hopes you enjoy this week's featured nonprofit.
Our featured nonprofit today is Family Service League. Good morning, everyone. This is Ron Gold from Marketing Works. The name of the show is The Nonprofit Voice. If you would like your agency to be on this show, email me at ron@marketingworkspr.com. We're here with Karen Borstein, who is the CEO and president of Family Service League, and Jonathan Schenko, who is the chief development officer at Family Service League. What is DASH? How's that?
Sure.
Just come right out and ask.
Yeah, sure. So DASH stands for Diagnostic Assessment and Stabilization Hub. This is a program that we started in 2019, and think of it as the counterpart to medical urgent care. We are mental health and substance abuse urgent care. We are open 24/7, 365 days a year. If anyone is experiencing a mental health crisis or a substance abuse crisis, you can contact us at DASH and to come in for an evaluation, an assessment immediately, and you can stay up to 24 hours if needed. We provide, as I said, a full assessment right there. It's a place where people can go, Ron, instead of going to an emergency room of a hospital. Oftentimes, emergency room is not the best place for a psychiatric problem that you're having. Very
That's
different
true.
Environment.
Yeah.
And certainly for if you have a child or an adolescent who's suffering from something, and instead of going to an ER, which can be very intimidating and frightening, DASH offers a very professional, calming environment where you can be seen and get the services you need and an evaluation much faster than you would, certainly than an ER. We have a family environment. If parents have to bring their other children with them, hypothetically, we have a family room where they can be and, you know, things to occupy a child while their sibling is being evaluated. We have all that to make it as comfortable and non-intimidating as possible. And, you know, what we have found through the crisis stabilization is we really can avoid unnecessary ER visits and or hospitalizations. It's a model that is done throughout the country, not our DASH, but I mean the crisis stabilization centers. And when Family Service League opened DASH, it's the first one here on Long Island. So we're very proud of that and proud of the the numbers and the outcomes that we're seeing of how we can really avoid unnecessary ER visits. So if someone needs medical attention, clearly they need to go to hospital. But if it's psychiatric problem, substance abuse, you can come to us. And it's not only getting the care at that time, you know, delivering the right care at the right time, we're going to make sure you're connected and have ongoing help, whether it's with Family Service League or another not-for-profit closer to where you live, where a person lives. We're going to get connected and do the follow-up to make sure that someone really went and to make them ensure that they are connected and hooked up with another organization. So it's really has been a lifeline, and I'd like to give out the number.
Go ahead,
of
please.
Our hotline, because if someone is questioning, what do I do? Really, to anyone out there, call our hotline and one of our staff will speak to you and help make an assessment and guide you. So the number is 631-952-3333. That's a hotline for DASH. And also as part of our hub there, we have the mobile crisis team that can go out and be deployed. So if someone can't get to us, but they're feeling that, you know, they're really in crisis, we can send out the mobile team, which consists of two, sometimes three people, to go out there and meet with an individual. And again, to make an assessment, do they need to be brought into DASH? Do they need to go to a hospital? What has to happen? So, you know, we look at it, you know, this holistic approach and really getting people help. And as I said, it's really has demonstrated results throughout the county.
Now, when it comes to mental health, it's very important with the police department to be able to handle the situations in the best possible way.
Right.
And I know in some of the police forces in Nassau County that they have people trained now to handle mental health situations. Are you finding that, or are they just saying that?
Well, in Suffolk County, so this is one of our newer aspects to our crisis work, we are indeed working with Suffolk County Police as well as many of the East End towns. We started a pilot project with Southampton Town where we work with them in a really collaborative way where they contact us. If they have a call and they go out to see an individual and they suspect that this person really may not need the police involved but needs the mental health worker, they contact our hotline, we get connected, and either on their tablets or the phone, we do a telehealth assessment right there in live time. If we need to go out to the community to meet with them, we will. But oftentimes we're finding through a telehealth visit right there, we're able to make an assessment, a determination, okay, does this person need the police, or can the police then, you know, leave and leave that person in the hands of a Family Service League and help us make the assessment and get the care to the person that they need. So again, demonstrate results. The police, particularly in the East End, are thrilled because it avoids them having to, you know, unnecessarily drive all the way into Stony Brook CPEP program if they can, say, avoid someone not needing to go there unless they have to. So the police are thrilled with the work they're doing. They welcome it because they say, look, we're not mental health counselors here. We don't know. So the fact that they have a mental health partner, they are over the moon with this. And
oh, it's so important. It really is. Yeah. You know, we have a few other agencies we work with that are all mental health. So
right.
They're there a lot. Let's talk to Jonathan. I mean, he's been quiet for the last 30 minutes. Jonathan, tell me about your job as chief development officer and, you know, how tough it is to keep a staff when you can't really do that kind of events anymore.
Well, you know, we really haven't missed a beat, Ron. You know, I look at these things as a challenge and an opportunity rather than a pitfall. We had virtual events, I mean, that were quite successful. Our sponsors and our donors, we like to keep very engaged and truly understand the work that we do. So, you know, they understood completely why they weren't able to come meet with us and have great events like you were at Bourne Mansion and supported us just the same. So the only downside to the whole course of events last year was we lost a little bit of engagement opportunity in person. But the fact is that all of our sponsors and all of our donors, they know us. They know what we do. They know the value we provide, and they know that we keep people safe. So all of them really ponied up, like they always do, with their sponsorships, in our journals, attending our virtual events, being a part of our virtual events. And we had a very successful fundraising year last year. This year, we're transitioning into in-person events. Of course, we will follow all CDC guidelines, and if necessary, would cancel those events. But, always offering our sponsors and the people who support us some kind of a value for what they do for us. And that's our goal, whether it be on our virtual journal, whether it be commercials airing on our website for high-end sponsors.
Oh, good.
Including them in our e-news, making sure the public knows that how many corporations, businesses, individuals, foundations are coming to the table to support Family Service League.
Well, you know, your donors are different than your vendors who become sponsors, because I'm sure that all your vendors got paid like they did every year, to ask them to support you, for the same way that they support you at events. Well, they couldn't buy a table, or take a sponsorship for it, be there, but they are supporting you. It's important, that you need it more now than you did then. You still needed it, but you were forced to put on these virtual events. What type of virtual events did you do?
Well, we had the first thing that we had was a walk that was actually a hybrid event. People could walk where they were comfortable walking without attending the event, or come down to Belmont Lake State Park and walk with us. And that worked very well. And then we had our 95th anniversary online gala, which was really very, very nice. A lot of people appreciated that because, you can add certain value in an online event that maybe wouldn't be too successful in an in-person event, by way of some entertainment and some video that people could really see firsthand and up close. We offered people the opportunity to, give a toast with us at home.
And oh, that's nice.
Where they could do so. So, we really did well in our virtual events, and people, I think, appreciated just that, even if it wasn't in person, the opportunity to engage with us and hear from us what was happening at Family Service League and know that they were part of such an important process.
So, when you did the virtual events, your expenses are virtually nothing, really, in comparison.
They do come down a great deal, yes.
Yeah, so, you could look at the profit margin in that, but it's still not the same as far as financial.
Well, I have to disagree. Our sponsors stepped up, and we made our event budget last year. We added a few things, like a 95th anniversary raffle where someone had the incredible opportunity to win a $9,500 and two prizes of $500, and actually three of those people donated that money back.
Yay. I love that.
So we had,
That's nice.
We created new opportunities, and people understood what we were doing, and we made our event budget last year, so we were very pleased with that.
Well, I have hats off to you, Jonathan, because most agencies didn't. And they probably weren't as creative as you are with that 95th anniversary toast. That's what you have to do. You have to be creative. I think the first virtual event that we put on was not the greatest. They made money, but it was I felt like it was a learning experience. And after that, every time we did an event for our clients, they all made money, because we were able to tap into the people that we supported anyway. And most people don't have a donor list like I'm sure you do. Just looking at the agency that you serve, 50,000 people, it's amazing. So you must have a good donor list from there.
We do, and we cultivate new donors all the time by virtue of introduction from our board. The community, other donors who want their friends and their colleagues to understand what they're contributing to and how important it is, and want to introduce them to us. We're very pleased with the people who come to support us and stay to support us year after year after year. And, you know, in regard to what you said about the vendors, they couldn't buy tables, but they were more than happy
to take sponsorships,
buy sponsorships for the virtual
Absolutely.
Event. Yeah, it was great.
Did you do online auctions also?
We sure did. We did online auctions. We had some incredible prizes from just amazing trips and vacations, right down to very affordable things that the average person could participate and bid on and win. And so we feel like it gives everyone a chance to support us.
Well, just listening to you, Jonathan, you know, I work with, obviously, in my role as a marketing public relations company, we work almost exclusively with the CEO and the development directors. And most of the development directors, and I'm not going to give them advice because they're not going to listen to me, don't seem to have the same kind of attitude that you do. Helping the board, pushing the board a little bit to bring in people, to bring in donors. And I'm sure you go out to different networking events to see if you can bring people in. And I think, you know, through the Chamber of Commerce's and through other networking groups, at least before COVID, that was the best way to get people. You meet them, you've got the personality for it, and they will support you. You know, bring them into some of the committees, show them around, show them what you have. I mean, you've got a major positive attitude, and I like that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, if you work for an agency like FSL and you see the rubber hit the road, you see the people getting the help, you see the passion in the staff, that's what motivates me. You know, I do this for them. I feel like I'm supporting hundreds of people who are helping thousands of people, and they're relying on me to do that. So it really in itself is all the motivation I need. Plus great leadership, but you know, Karen doesn't like me to say that out loud.
Of course not.
But he is, just like he is a friendly, friendly man and engaging and works well with our donors, with the board. You know, we're lucky to have Jonathan.
You know, I love your relationship with Island Harvest. You know, I think the world of her. She's terrific. And
now, Randy is my partner.
She is?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. I didn't know that.
She's, there you go.
Yeah, tell her I said hello. I'm sure she's going to listen to the show. So if somebody wants to donate to you, you know, through, and they want to do it at a time like an event that might be coming up, what's the next event that you're doing?
Well, we have our first event will be in June, and that will be a cocktail party at Bourne Mansion.
Okay.
And that will be on June 16th.
And I think that's safe, believe it or not. I think
we're hoping to have it outside.
Oh, it's beautiful there.
So a lot of air will be circulating, and there'll be a lot of room between tables. And then we transition to September to our walk at Belmont Lake State Park. We don't have a definite date yet. We have to wait for the state to give us one.
Uh-huh.
And then we're very excited to say in November, on November 14th, we will have great chefs returning.
Oh,
and,
nice.
You know, we're cautious. We're optimistic. We have a couple of ways that we're going to help people to stay safe and distance. But we're truly hoping that we can make that happen because I will tell you, after 28 or 29 years of great chefs, that's one event that you don't have the luxury of not having. People want that event. It is an amazing, amazing event where you get to sample foods from so many restaurants, great restaurants, make a game plan for your eating for the next month, and really have a great time and socialize. So those are our events, and that will be on November 14th.
You're missing a golf outing, but I know that I can't talk you into it, so.
Well, you know, we always consider it. We used to have one, and we will still always consider anything that's a possibility.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about the one I came up with, because I talked to Karen about it. I came up with the concept of a nine and dine. Nine holes of golf, and then a barbecue dinner, and it's only $100 a person. Not, it's $100 to you, and then you charge what you want. And I've used it twice. I have two more that I'm doing this year so far that I just booked in the last few days. It's a chance to try a golf outing without doing a whole big thing. We do it all for you. It's all one package we put together. You'll have the golf at either Stonebridge or Bethpage, and the barbecue is outside. So I'll talk to you about it soon, because I think it's something that it's a good way to try. I like the when some of the agencies said, look at my clientele. They're not going to the golf outing. Well, they're not going to support you at a golf outing. You know, it's not them that you're getting money from. So anyway, Karen Boorstein, I am so thrilled to finally have you on again. And I wish you the best. And Jonathan, keep up that positive atmosphere that you portray. I love it. And this is Ron Gold from Marketing Works. And it's a nonprofit voice.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.